Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Today on the podcast, we have Kimberly and Cole Wagner. Kimberly has been with the company for about 15 years. And I think Cole, Emily, did he mention he's been with Transova about 13?
Yep.
And a lot like our previous podcast interviews, they both met at Transova. So we have another Transova love story. But they are married and they work together within Transova. They both play pretty integral parts within the company, wouldn't you say, Emily?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Cole manages the sex semen lab in Iowa and kind of helps coordinate the other ones too throughout the country. And Kimberly basically does a lot of the IVF scheduling and our courier system too. So they're huge parts in our system, which we're grateful to have hardworking people like them. And they give a lot of insight into the details of what they do every day, which is very insightful. And Sarah, I feel like at some point we could probably rename this podcast like Transova and Parenting and Marriage, like, because we touch on that a little bit too, but a lot of good stuff.
Right. About, you know, when you work to, when you're a husband and wife and you both work for the same company, you know, how you take that, don't take that home, or you do take it home, and how you have those conversations. And so, you know, Cole and Kimberly kind of show how they have those days where they do that and those days where they don't. So it's just interesting to hear the different variations in relationships and within working positions as well.
Yeah. And Cole will go into a lot of the details of the sorting process, which I think is going to be super like interesting for our listeners to hear, because it's something that we don't openly talk about a lot, I think, but everybody has questions about, and he does a good job, I think, of explaining things. And I'm sure it's going to open up a lot more questions too.
Absolutely. I think they are both a wealth of knowledge in terms of a lot of the processes that go on at Transova. And I mean, their coordination and that communication they do is a key component to a lot of the success we have at Transova. So I'm anxious for everybody to listen to them. I guess we'll just go ahead and get started. Here's Kimberly and Cole.
Well, thank you, Cole and Kimberly, for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it for a Monday. Why don't you start out and introduce yourselves and tell us about your roles here at Transova?
My name is Kimberly Wagner. I am originally from Texas. I've been with Transova for almost 15 years now. My role is the client service in client service department is the IVF schedule coordinator. With that position, I do a lot of maintaining the schedule between the labs and all of our sites to ensure that labs are within their capacity and to ensure that the teams are able to handle what is coming at them for numbers and to best utilize, like I said, lab capacities, recipient herds, fresh shipments going out the door, freezing, best utilize all of those options that we have. I also work as managing our courier system. We have a large team of drivers that travel the state of Iowa and all of the surrounding states to pick up oocytes from our collection facilities and drop off fresh IVF embryos. And then I also work with our recipient team to help manage and utilize the recipient herd that we put embryos into.
My name is Cole Wagner. I am the sex semen lab coordinator here at Transova. I have been with Transova for about 13 years in the sex semen lab. As a sex semen lab coordinator, I spend most of my time managing the functions within the Iowa lab here. So running the machines, actually sorting the semen for reverse sorts for IVF. I also then oversee the production of our second shift, which is when we sort the fresh ejaculates that we then freeze into straws for AI or ET use. And in terms of the coordinator role, I have functions across the company wide, where I work with the other sex semen lab managers to validate current processes, current SOPs, assist with any troubleshooting, and then as well as just coordinating when a technician is gone on vacation, making sure we can shuffle technicians from other labs around to help cover the workload that that person is leaving behind.
Perfect. And one thing, I don't remember if this is right or not. We talked to Jeff and Patty, and we've talked about how they met at Transova. Is Transova where both of you met as well?
Yes.
It is.
Yep.
Okay. And Cole, how long have you been with Transova? Kimberly, you said 15 years.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm over 13, close to 14.
Okay. So you've both been here for quite a while. Tell me, you guys have both been in integral roles within Transova. What does a normal day look like for each of you? Is it vary quite a bit, or is it pretty standard? I mean, Kimberly, you've talked about how you do a lot of different scheduling. Can you guys just kind of tell us a little bit about your day?
Sure. So an average day for me can be similar in some ways, but can vary within each item that I'm doing. Average day starts around 7 o'clock, working with our embryologist and our recip team to decipher what the plan is for each fresh IVF embryo that is coming out that day. What is going to be frozen? What is going to be going fresh into a Transova recip or a client recip? Then working with the lab to prepare for what they need to do, whether it's organizing the order that we're going to transfer embryos in to help make ear tags and get the frozens lined up for what's going to go in. After that, it's back to my desk to get the courier trips lined up on where each courier is going that day, let them know what they need to deliver to each spot, what needs to be picked up, if there's any frozen inventory that needs to go out or any supplies that are coming from the main office here that need to go out. And then the rest of the day is spent helping manage the IVF schedule and our sort capacity and make sure I's are dotted and T's are crossed and what information is showing in our system is accurate. And if there's any questions that we have for the future day, for the next day, communicating with the other team members to get that information from their clients so that we can be as prepared and have as accurate information as possible going into it.
In general, my days kind of look the same and tend to run together for the most part. We do reverse sorts Tuesday through Fridays. So our mornings are usually spent really early. Sometimes we're at the lab at 5:30 in the morning if we have a busy reverse sort day. So we're then doing calibrating the machines for sorting and then actually sorting the reverse sorts for IVF use that day, sometimes till 12:30, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. From that point on, we transition into what we call like our second shift duties. The second shift is where we're getting fresh semen driven to us from a bull stud within the Midwest. We'll then sort that semen and then freeze that down into straws at night. So that second shift usually goes from about 2 p.m. until 10 p.m. So I'm not usually here for the majority of that shift, but just kind of overseeing that transition of when the reverse sorts end and then starting the sorting of the fresh ejaculate. So other than that, afternoons are usually when I catch up on paperwork, data entry. If we need to do any semen pulling that we're all going to use in IVF the next day, I help out with that. Pulling any last minute shipments that need to be shipped out. So more of the administrative duties is kind of what fills my days in the afternoons.
So Cole, did you say what time you guys start in the morning for sorting?
Yeah. So if we're on a busy reverse sort day, when we've got a lot of semen arriving that the couriers Kimberly sent out are bringing back that we use that day, it's not uncommon for Cody and I both to be here at 5:30 in the morning. Just making sure, you know, all the machines need to be working optimally before we use them, you know, just making sure that we've got all of the inputs, all the semen that we need before we start. Cause it's disruptive to our day if we discover an issue, you know, 2-3 hours into the process. It just takes Cody away to do something and then leaves us shorthanded in the lab to handle all the things that are continually happening. It's one of those things, like it's like a train. Once it goes, it's really hard to stop. And so Just making sure that we hopefully have all the problems out of the way as best as we can before we start is kind of why we end up getting here so early in the morning on those busy days.
Mm-hmm. And some people don't realize how the sorting process happens in advance from fertilization. And so how long, like before actual fertilization, do you sort the semen?
So we generally figure a reverse sort, depending on the number of oocytes we have to collect for, an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes before fert is when we start. So based off of what time the oocytes went into maturation, that's when we kind of figure out what the sort order is going to be for that day. And then based off of that, we look at, okay, when should we start thawing in order to have semen to them within the 20 to 24 hour fert window that they're looking for.
Awesome. So can you guys, you both see different kind of sides of the IVF process. What are some key things that clients should know when scheduling IVF procedures? Maybe, if they're going to use the reverse sort technology, and Kimberly, if they want to utilize the recipient program, what are some things that they need to know if they're first timers with us?
Sure. So on the IVF side, when scheduling donors, a lot of the key questions that we ask our clients, mainly it's going to be, what is your goal from this? Are you wanting to collect a donor multiple times and use reverse sorted semen and put everything in fresh and run her till she quits working anymore? Is this a donor that you just purchased that you just want to do one collection on and see what she does? A lot of the information that we need coming in is going to be, just general donor information, her age, her approximate weight, whether she's been collected before, how she was collected. Is she open or pregnant? A lot of clients we find don't realize that you can collect a donor while she is pregnant. So getting that basic information so that we know how to, if we're going to be using FSH or stimulating hormones, how to dose that donor. If a donor is not being stimulated with hormones, having an idea of how she collected previously will kind of help to give us an idea of what she's going to do naturally. Knowing that, we collect donors 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday here in office. Satellite centers have specific days that they collect on, and scheduling accordingly depending on where those donors are going to be collected at. What type of semen you're wanting to use, how many units of semen would be required for one donor. We have a good data set of information to look at to see kind of historically what a bull does. But each donor is different on how they're going to produce, and each mating is different on how they're going to produce. So that's just kind of looking at it as an average to give them an idea if they have an option between two bulls. Well, this one historically works better than bull B. And then having an idea of what they want to do with their embryos. Are you wanting to freeze embryos? Okay, well, this is the route we would go for that. Are you wanting to implant those embryos fresh into Transova recipients? How many do you think you're going to want to implant? Are you going to want to implant freezable embryos versus non-freezable embryos? And then the other option being, are you wanting to ship those embryos out fresh for your own practitioner or another Transova team to implant fresh into your own herd or to a cooperator herd? A lot of different varieties, a lot of different options our clients have going into scheduling a donor and what the final outcome for that donor will be in those embryos. But kind of laying it out there, not to overwhelm them with options, but to lay out a clear plan of what they're wanting to do and what their end goal is.
Yeah, just to add to that, I would just talk about the organization on the front side. It saves so many headaches for everybody else on the backside. So the more organized they are and knowing exactly what they want when they schedule the procedure, even knowing if my cow has a lot of oocytes, I want to split, what's that backup bull right away? Any less points of contact saves time within our internal team members of not having to communicate. I don't have to communicate to Kimberly, then Kimberly doesn't have to communicate to the client and then back and forth. So the knowing information up front is really beneficial. And that just funnels into kind of how well we can serve them throughout the whole process. Like Kimberly said, if we don't know until the day before their donor's collected that they want to pick, you know, bull X, well, then I look up that I think he's a horrible option if they want to reverse sort. He's got low semen concentration, or he's got a high dead rate, or, you know, something like that. We can kind of shuffle them around or provide them with information to get hopefully a better end result. But if they don't know that until so far late in the process, we kind of lose some of our time to be able to provide them with that information. So anything that we can do to expedite information coming in early helps us, I think, and ensure a good outcome on the backside.
It sounds like a lot of moving parts that you guys have to keep together to make it a successful process. Cole, you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but I know when you talk to clients, we always talk about the variation. You know, every mating is different, bull is different, donor is different, and even sometimes from procedure to procedure is different. Can you explain maybe a little bit how or why that variation occurs, or, you know, when you're, if you were going to explain it from your point of view, give some insight on that.
Yeah. So, you know, donor aside, you know, there's always going to be differences from donor to donor, even collection to collection, as she changes her age and where she's at in her cycle and all those things. Just on the semen side alone, you've got bulls, one that could be collected in completely different bull studs. So just because we did semen from an Angus bull that was made in 2017 that worked really well, but if this client has semen made from 2020, that historically that semen has not performed well, that can be, you know, a potential issue. So just that difference in collection code is something that we found can be relatively significant. Some bulls, there are almost no differences in the collection codes. You know, the bull is good no matter what. But yeah, we find others where certain collections, for whatever reason, just do not perform the same. So variation in collection code. We also have sometimes variation in how different clients handle their semen. So even though this client might have a code that we know has performed well, if for whatever reason, somewhere along the way, that semen wasn't handled properly, it might have lower quality by the time we start that process. And so once semen has lower quality, there's not much that you can do to change the quality of the semen once our processes start. So it's just kind of a negative impact that can happen that we can't really do anything about. Yeah, other than that, just from procedure to procedure, sometimes we obviously try to maximize and do everything exactly the same as best we can. We've got, you know, media that is constantly being tested on the FERT side. We purchase large quantities of all of our sorter fluids, so that way we don't have any variables in how certain media is performing on a given day. So just kind of standardizing as many of those inputs on our end to hopefully make the semen that we're actually getting is kind of the only variable that we have to deal with on our side is what our goal is.
Yeah. I usually like to tell people, like, you can only manipulate Mother Nature so much before she, you know, puts a hand on things, and, you know, you can do everything right, but if she doesn't want to, I mean, you're not going to make embryos. So
that's right.
Well, and then just even too, like, we talk about how we have all this data, but just making sure that clients understand that in to a certain extent, that's just data, you know, without running statistics on everything and doing some of those like actually scientific things, we're telling you that this code has an EDR of 30% and this one has an EDR of 20%. But to a certain extent, that isn't a guarantee and in either direction. So just making sure that clients understand that we're giving them the best information that we have, but by no means is that a guarantee, you know, and, you know, hopefully it's just something that we're making sure that we're protecting ourselves too, and not making claims or guarantees that we, you know, can't back up.
Yep. Good points. So also too, a straw semen from a certain collection could work really well for AI, right? And not on IVF and vice versa. Is that right, Cole, or no?
Yeah. This is where it gets really interesting and kind of tricky and hard to explain to people. What we're doing in the dish, you know, we try to mimic as much of nature as we can in the dish, but it's not really the same as what's going on in the cow, as hard as we try. So usually what we'll see is semen that works for AI is usually fine for working in the IVF process here, but it doesn't always go the other way. You know, we're putting those sperm in a tiny spot directly next to the eggs where maybe motility isn't quite as important because the sperm are not swimming all the way through the reproductive tract of the cow. So sometimes you can use a lower quality sample in IVF that you would not be able to use in AI. And then the reverse sorting process in itself is a whole nother layer of complexity there, because everything we're doing throughout the sorting process is adding stress to those sperm cells. And so if you've got lower quality cells to start with, we're not going to make them any better by the time they're done. So semen might be able to perform okay when used conventionally for a fert, but is not sortable because it's just not high enough quality to survive everything that we're going to do to it in order to get them the 90% accuracy that they're looking for.
And maybe this is a good point where we could talk about the options for semen and how, you know, there's rare and valuable semen, and how you can, and maybe Kimberly, you can touch on this too, when you're talking to a client and they say, I've got this really expensive straw of semen, what can I do with it? You know, how we can talk about multiple donors or just their options for their semen if they have something coming up on the schedule.
Sure. So yeah, the rare or expensive bulls are always some of our favorites. We first start out by asking, okay, you know, do you have a market for bulls and heifers? Is that, are you looking to use this non-sex? Do you have a market for those bulls? Do you have a market for those heifers? If you do, then using it non-sexed is going to be able to stretch that unit out further than if we were to reverse sort it. Conventionally, one unit, you know, depending on OSA numbers, could cover multiple donors. If they say, no, I have absolutely no market for bull calves, they're worth nothing to me, that's when we start communication with the labs to see, okay, do we have history of this bull? Have we used this bull before? Historically, how many donors has that covered? Historically, how many oocytes has that covered? And then we go back, communicate with the client, okay, based on the data that we have, this is what we've been able to do with it. We always ask for a backup bull and a priority order when it comes to fertilization. Once those donors are collected, we have an oocyte count. We communicate with the lab and say, okay, yeah, that probably could cover 4 or 5 donors. Then we'll go back to the client and say, okay, this is what we estimate it to be able to cover. What is your priority for fertilization? And then what is your backup bull? And then we'll communicate, okay, this is how far we think this is going to go. The backup bull, if for timing-wise, if the first bull is a reverse sort, timing-wise, a reverse sort does not generally work as a backup. By the time we get to the backup bull and the reverse sort process, we're going to be outside of that fertilization window. So we work with them on donor counts, oocyte counts, how far we anticipate that one unit to be able to spread, and then always come back with a backup bull and a priority order of what we need to go in with.
Yeah, like Kimberly said, just to echo that, just the communication back and forth of what has this bull kid been capable of doing in the past. You know, if a client wants to do 5 donors reverse sort to a unit that I just know we've never been able to cover more than 2, you know, it doesn't make any sense to even schedule something like that. Like, what's the plan right now so we're not last minute scrambling? You know, it's some bulls, one unit can cover 3, 4, 5 cows reverse sorted, and some one unit is barely enough to cover 1. You know, there's just so many variables in terms of how many sperm cells bull studs are putting in to those straws that it makes it difficult sometimes for the staining process to work on those low concentration bulls. So yeah, that's when we just have to really communicate back and forth as best as we can to hopefully set their expectations appropriately.
That's what I was just going to comment. It sounds a lot of communication about setting expectations. You know, we have some wildly successful stories about the number of oocytes and embryos produced, but if you were to tell every client that, it wouldn't be accurate in terms of what they could expect. And it sounds like you guys do a lot of communicating that for each mating chosen, or bull sire chosen, I guess, in each procedure. Would that be right?
Yes.
Yeah. Communication is key, whether it's communication between the labs and the client service departments on what the plan is, and communication with the clients as to what to expect. And again, what they are wanting to get out of the semen. What are your top donors that this is the top mating that you want to use this bull on? And then go down. And as much as we can plan ahead of time, like Cole said, so that we don't have any surprises and we have to try and get a hold of the client and come up with a backup bull and find semen and all of that stuff. Plan as much as we can ahead of time going into fertilization day, so we have a strict plan in place, and we'll take that semen as far as we can without jeopardizing the fertilization of anything, but having something in place as the backup for when we do run out of semen.
So Cole, you mentioned that you guys have a second shift that will freeze or sort fresh ejaculate in Iowa. Do any of the other sites have that capability yet?
Some of the other sites have dabbled a little bit into sorting some of the fresh semen. Our California lab has done a little bit of that. It's a little bit different just because the facility wasn't designed specifically for that. So some of the equipment needs aren't exactly the same. Do they have the ability? Yes. On a significant scale, probably not yet. Maryland would be another one that they partnered with another local bull stud to help with the final processing and freezing part, because that lab, again, doesn't have that equipment to freeze it and straw it up and do those sorts of things. But in terms of physically, can those labs sort of fresh ejaculate? Any of the labs could do that. It's just a matter of what are we doing with processing that and making sure it gets frozen down into straws in the appropriate way. It's been something we've definitely been looking at doing more and more of to try and expand that part of the market. But just at this point has not been something we've, devoted a lot of resources to quite yet.
Cole, maybe you could go into, when we talk about sorted semen, the percentages of getting bull versus heifer and some of maybe the nitty gritty into that when people talk about, you know, what are my odds of actually getting what I desire when I do a sort? Would you be able to talk about some of that?
Yep. So industry accepted average for the purity of sex semen is around 90%. So on the fresh ejaculates, the day after we freeze them, we evaluate a straw for motility to make sure that we have enough live cells in the straw. And then we'll restain those cells and run them back through the sorter to determine what we call our purity. So again, oftentimes the machine is calculating 92 to 93% purity, but we'll, 90% is industry accepted average. Along with that, though, imagine, so we're freezing semen at sometimes 3 to 5 million sperm per straw. So if you've got 90% females in that straw, you still have 10% males that could still be alive and able to fertilize. So, 10% of 5 million sperm straw is 500,000 cells. So there is still a relatively significant number of male sperm that could be in that straw, so that we would never tell a client to expect 100% accuracy by any means. What we found on our reverse sorting process, because we're able to sort slower and more selective, that our purity is usually higher. So when we run our purity resource on reverse sorted semen, the machine is oftentimes calculating 95-96% females. And then the data that we've looked at on the embryos that have been transferred into our recips when they go through their 60-day fetal sexing here, company-wide, we're running closer to like 98% females. So usually more accurate than what our machine is telling us when it comes to actual embryos made. When we're talking about male semen, whether sex frozen or reverse sorted, those percentages do go down a little bit. We can expect probably closer to that 90% on each of those. And that's a lot has to do with just how the staining process and the sorting process works. So we're staining those cells, and a female cell is going to absorb more dye and fluoresce more than what a male cell would fluoresce. So, but there's always a chance that a female cell fluoresces too low and would look like a male cell when it's running through our machine. Vice versa, a male cell will never absorb too much to fluoresce in what would be a female sperm cell area. So that inherent process difference is what's going to probably allow for a little bit more of a decrease in the purity of the male sorted semen than what you expect on the female side.
Very cool. So Kimberly, I feel like a lot of questions, we get a lot of questions at trade shows. Is there a difference in pregnancy rates of embryos that use reverse sorted semen? Do you see any differences in your experience with IVF?
No, there generally shouldn't be any differences in embryos created from reverse sort, sex frozen, conventional matings. If there are any differences, you're going to see it more on the mating itself and how the donor responds to a reverse sort or a conventional fertilization. In the end, when we're grading embryos, when those oocytes are fertilized and create an embryo, a grade one embryo is a grade one. Grade two is a grade two. So they're all graded on the same scale. You shouldn't see any differences in the preg rates. Like I said, it may just, if you do, it'll be a variation more on the mating itself or how that donor's responding to that fertilization.
Kimberly, maybe since you do a lot of talking to clients, could you talk about the recipient options that you are talking to them about? You know, once, you know, we always talk about the services, the ET, the IVF, but once they have those embryos, kind of what options do they have once they've gone through that whole process?
Sure. So yeah, so there are multiple options on what a client can do with their embryos. On the fresh side, Transova does offer a recipient option. We offer the purchase of a confirmed 60-day pregnancy. Those embryos can be put in fresh and or frozen into Transova cows. We will gestate. They'll go through two preg checks, one at 40 days and one at 60 days. And then once that recipient is confirmed pregnant at 60 days, she's ready to be picked up and taken home. Another option for clients is to either haul in their own recips into the Sioux Center, Iowa location to implant fresh or frozen embryos into, or we can ship those embryos out fresh in an incubator for their own practitioner or an outside Transova team to implant into their own herd or into cooperator herds. We send out fresh IVF embryos 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday. So that's done on a regular basis. We are implanting into Transova recipients Monday through Saturday. So that's a heavy option there as well. If they're aspirating a donor and it's just not the right time for them to implant and be calving out those calves, they can freeze those embryos. And again, those can be shipped back home for them to implant into their own cows. Those can be put into Transova recipients and purchasing the pregnant cow at the same time.
Okay, so three questions from that, Kimberly. Are the recipients fetal sexed?
Yes, recipients are fetal sexed at 60 days.
Okay, so when I was an embryologist, we had people from all over putting in embryos into the Iowa herd. How does a client handle trucking? Are they responsible for that, or does the client service team help arrange that?
Sure. So clients are responsible for trucking of their recips. However, we do help line up trucking to get those pregnancies to them. We send out, we have a local trucking company that we work with on a regular basis that we try and make a full trailer load to make it as cost effective for the clients as possible. And send them out on kind of regular routes heading east, kind of those Midwest states. But ultimately, client is responsible for the trucking of the recips. We do have a number of truckers' contact information that we can give to clients depending on where they're at and where those recips need to go. But we do help to line up and try and make it as cost effective as we can depending on where those recips are going.
So Kimberly, you mentioned that, you know, clients can freeze embryos and put them in at a later date, you know, or fresh, they can put them into our cows. If a client is looking to implant embryos at, you know, in that spring, heavy breeding, early summer time, how far in advance should they make their reservation of recipients with us?
Sure. So that is the March to June implant time is our busiest time for implanting fresh and frozen embryos. When we are purchasing our recipient cows, we are purchasing based on historical trends of what that season has been like, and also a lot based on what we currently have scheduled to implant. So the earlier, the better that you can get those transfers on the board, those transfers requested. You know, we're probably buying 3 months in advance so that we're purchasing those cows, backgrounding them, getting them to the area to get them acclimated in preparation of that busier time. So sooner the better, 2 to 3 months, probably at the latest. Obviously, you know, if something comes up and you call in April for a May implant or June implant, we can definitely make that happen for you. But to ensure that you will get what you're asking for, what you're putting on the schedule, we ask that you let us know 2 to 3 months in advance so that we can buy accordingly.
So Kimberly, we do a lot of talking about donor care and management, but on the flip side is, you know, the equally important recipient who is actually accepting those embryos or you're transferring those embryos. Can you tell me a little bit, you've mentioned backgrounding. Why is that important in terms of success rate, you know, having a successful embryo transfer program?
Sure. So when Transova purchases recips, we are purchasing dry cows. We purchase cows that are 3 to 6 years of age. We purchase an Angus based type cow. I say an Angus based because, you know, you'll have some black baldies, some creams, some reds, in there, but, we try and give, as much of a, type cow, to our clients. When we purchase those cows, we do background for major diseases. We want the recips to come in with a clean bill of health. We cull the recips, reproductively. If we palpate and we see anything that doesn't meet, our requirements, we cull based on, physical appearance and disposition as best as we can tell. So what we're bringing into our recipient herd is, we try and cull and look at what type of cow we'd want to take home ourselves to calve out. For clients that are purchasing their own recips, you know, making sure that you're purchasing, a healthy recip, one that nutritionally sound, you know, checking with your local vet, your local feed provider to make sure that that they're getting all the nutrients that they need, that they're not missing out on anything. Because having a healthy both disease-wise and nutrition-wise, a recip to put that embryo into is going to give you the best option for a good outcome on getting pregnancies. The difference, you know, if you want to put embryos into your own herd versus Transova recips, you know, Transova, you're purchasing a pregnant recip, you're purchasing a 60-day pregnancy. So if you put in 5 embryos and you get 3 pregnancies, you're not out feeding those to opens. That risk is put on Transova. So if you're just in it for the pregnancies and you don't want to keep around any open cows, the Transova recipient program is for you. If you have 100 head of recips to choose from and you're going to turn a bull out with them after you implant embryos, you know, then the option to look at your own herd for implant would be good too.
I think the other cool thing about our recipient program is all the guys out there working the cows have their own cows too, for the most part, right? Right. So they know what's going to be a good cow. And two, Reed, I mean, based on, he looks at what embryos are going in, like yep. the mating. So he studies them and he tries to pair cows based on frame size and
yeah, and that's a lot of every morning that we're doing. We're looking at what matings are going in and what the breeds going in. So we try and line up frame size with the type of mating that's going in. We have some clients that we know are maybe, you know, older in age that can't get out and work, you know, 20 head of younger cows. And maybe they need, you know, some really quiet ones that just kind of go with the flow, and they're only purchasing two cows. So which we try and match up definitely as far as the frame size and the breed, going into it and the mating itself. Cause within, you know, clubbies, we know that there's a difference in that. And we've got a great team of herdsmen on the recip side that, that are looking at these cows every day and determining whether that cow gets an embryo or not today. You know, weather plays a big role on these cows' temperament sometimes. And if she's just not feeling it that day and we're not feeling her attitude, we're going to send her the other direction and not put an embryo in her. So a lot of factors go into what we do every morning in the lab, determining what is going into what type of recip. Embryo-wise, client-wise, disposition-wise. So trying to match that up as best as we can with the information that we have.
Changing the tune a little bit. This year, the year 2020 has been kind of a crazy year, but it does signify Transova's 40th anniversary. So would both of you tell me what kind of changes you've seen since you started with Transova, what those 40 years kind of mean to you in your own personal position, and then something you're looking forward to, or, you know, what you see in the future coming down the pipeline.
Sure. So I guess my history with Transova started when we purchased some pregnancies from Transova on a sale. Just this girl from South Texas and knew Transova that way and applied for a position. And they said, are you willing to move to Iowa? And I said, sure, why not? And almost 15 years later, when I started with Transova, we had, I think, two satellite centers, two regional centers, and yeah, I mean, it was aspirating cows Monday through Thursday and some on farm trips and some reverse sorting. And, you know, our days went on. And since then we've just grown into numbers that, you know, require more satellite centers, more regional centers. Our PWP program, are just managing capacities between all of the labs and trying to utilize everything that everybody has available. The growth of the company, the growth of the people, I just see, I mean, in my 15 years, what it's grown, and I just see the next 40 years, 50 years even, just becoming huge. You know, the technology that we have, the options are endless with what we can do for the cattle industry, for everything.
Yeah, again, echoing a lot of what Kimberly said, I would just add, you know, when I first started here, we had one sperm sorter in Iowa, and that's all we had company-wide. Now we've got four here in Iowa. We've got three in Maryland, two in Texas, two in California, and we're adding another one in Wisconsin. So just the volume with which that part of the program has developed, I think the reverse sorting in combination with IVF is what really blew the doors open on our IVF program. I remember when we first started, I mean, if we had 15 to 20 cows to fertilize that day, that was a big day. And now our big days are 220. So I just remember talking to the lab manager before me. When he left, we were doing seven or eight reverse sorts a day and freezing 20 straws of semen on our second shift. And I talked to him probably 2 years after he had left and told him that at that point we were doing 20 reverse sorts a day and freezing 40 units of semen. And he just could not believe it. He's like, there's no way you guys can handle that much work. But it's just crazy what we've been able to accomplish because we've hired really good people with motivation and people that are dedicated to what we're doing, dedicated to the clients. And then just been actively trying to grow as much as we can. So I think that's what gets me excited. Like Kimberly said about what's coming next is we don't really know what's coming next, but with the foundation and the teamwork that we've built, I mean, I can't envision it not being something successful.
Awesome. Good answers. So we're getting down to our time here. Is there anything that we missed that you guys want to talk about, or you know, anything you'd like to add? Was there a burning question that you were hoping we were going to ask you, Cole?
Maybe we should ask them what we asked Jeff and Patty, which is, what is it like working together?
What's it like working together?
Crickets.
No complaints ever.
None whatsoever.
Well, the nice thing with you guys is you have, you know, separate buildings, so, you know, you can get away from each other if you need to, right?
Yeah, it's...
Well, and there's the number of times where we get home in the evening and I'm like, wow, I literally didn't talk to you all day still. You know, some people, they ask, like, well, yeah, I mean, but I don't know. Like, it's just sometimes we communicate often, you know, about really important work things, and then the next day we'll both be too busy to the point where... Like you actually have something to talk about when you get home. Cause like, wow, I didn't tell you about everything that happened in my day. And then there's other times when we're slower, where it's like the second something happens, I just send her a text message. So it's a variety either way. You know, yeah. Sometimes we're communicating all the time, and sometimes you just don't realize that the whole day went by.
Are there times where you have to be like, we're not talking about work anymore, you know, like yes. At home? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We definitely have little vent sessions sometimes afterwards, and then it's kind of everybody get off your pity party and let's just not talk about that anymore.
Yeah. Well, and especially, you know, once you get home and you've got, I mean, your whole priorities change. You know, you've got to turn off your work brain and turn on your family brain, your routine, you know, especially with kids in school. You can sit there and stew on stuff that happened at work. Mm-hmm. You've got to turn it off, and you've got to get into the family mode of, you know, because the kids, they see what they kind of feed off of what your attitude is or thought process is at the moment. So if you're still reeling about what happened, you know, in that busy day today and everything that, you know, everything that went right, but everything that, you know, could have gone differently or something like that, it just adds to a chaotic evening.
I said sometimes it's hard to make that switch, like when you click off of that meeting or that phone call or whatever it might be, and then you're like, here are your kids, and you're just like, whoa, like, sorry, hold on, mom needs a minute.
Let me go grab that glass of wine real quick. I'll be over again. Yeah. And you know, because we work with clients that are 2 hours behind us and 2 hours ahead of us, and you know, they have jobs too, so you're trying to get information from them or answers from them within your business hours. But in reality, we know that you know, it's going to be 6, 7, 8 o'clock sometimes before somebody gets back to you, and you have to deal with it then. But yeah, it's sometimes it's very easy to leave work at work, and sometimes very hard.
Well, thank you guys very much. We appreciate it. And
you're very welcome. All right,
you're welcome.
Yes, thank you very much for joining today and spending time with us.
Yeah.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.